Vakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swapadantikam. So Bharati Bihari Prabhu and myself will say a few words. We're reading from his favorite verse.
You just happen to have on your iPhone.
We have non-technological book here. It's almost as good. Let's see if I can read without a computer. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, text number 22. Ananyas chente. Actually, you can start since this is your favorite verse, and I'll go next.
Really?
Yes.
I was really ready for that. Okay, Hare Krishna. Yeah. Is there a clock so I can keep track of time?
Yeah. Oh, it's right here, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye jana payupasate tesham nityabhijuktanam yoga kshemam aham yaham. So Maharaj just asked me 10 seconds ago what my favorite verse was. So this is one of them. So Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, and he says, but because prior he was talking about demigod worship and worship of other people besides him. So therefore he begins with, in English, with but. However, those who always worship me, Krishna says, with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. And Srila Prabhupada writes that one who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshiping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Anyone know the Sanskrit for what I just read? Yeah, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, etc., etc., etc. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to the material condition, to this material condition of life. Shema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotees to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. You were just teaching it. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down into a miserable conditioned life. Thank you. This verse, maybe some of you know, there's a really nice story that goes along with this verse. And I like to tell the story. It dates back a few centuries. And there was a great acharya. His name was Arjuna Acharya. And he was writing a tika, a commentary on this very verse in the Bhagavad Gita. You know this story? Yeah. How many of you know this story? Okay, good. That's a minority. So, you know, something like telling a story that everyone's already heard 100 times. You talking to me? Oh, somebody else. Okay. So Arjunacharya was a great Vaishnava, and he was writing a tika on the Gita, and he got to this verse. And he was bewildered, a little bewildered and a little disturbed, because it says, yoga shema mahamyaham, that Krishna personally preserves what a devotee has and carries what he lacks. And he's thinking, that's not exactly right. You know, this baham mean, you know, bahamyaham, I personally, Krishna doesn't have to personally do it. He can arrange it, right? He doesn't have to personally do it. He's a Supreme Lord. He's much busier than that. So he doesn't have to personally preserve what it, so he crossed out that word and put karomi, which means I arrange for my devotee to be taken care of. And then what he did was he left to take his noon bath. He's a Pakka Brahmin, and he was taking his noon bath before taking lunch. And meanwhile, his wife was to cook the bhoga, offer it to Thakurji, offer it to his deity, and then be ready for prasadam when his husband came back. So she started preparing, and all of a sudden, there was a knock on the door. They didn't have doorbells. We have some good doorbells in Vrindavan. My neighbor has a doorbell that goes, Jai Shri Ram! Jai Shri Ram! But anyway, so there was a knock on the door, and Mataji, Arjunacharya's wife, opened the door, and she saw these two beautiful young boys. And they were, you know, I forget what it's called, but, you know, they had a stick between their shoulders, and on each side there were these two very big cloth bags, one on each side of each boy, that they were, you know, carrying with some difficulty. And they said, oh, Mataji, here, we have some bhoga for you. You please take this very quickly. We have to go. And she said, no, please come in, no. And said, no, we have to go. Why do you have to go? Well, your husband, he's due back very soon, and he's already beaten us once, and if he sees us again, he may beat us again. And Arjunacharya's wife was shocked. My husband is such a mild-mannered Brahmin, he wouldn't hurt anyone. Why? And the darker complexioned boy lifted up his kurta and said, see? And there were these two slash marks on his back. And so they said, no, please take this bhoga. So they offered these two big bags of bhoga and then ran away. And they were filled with sabji and ghee and dahi and, you know, all kinds of things to make first-class preparations. But Arjuna's wife was so disturbed. How could my husband do such a thing? So she, you know, in this disturbed state of mind, she was cooking, and then she'd offered it to the deities, and she was so disturbed that she just started eating. Because, you know, traditionally, especially back in those days, the wife would wait for the husband and would serve the husband first. Is that how it happens in your house? All the men are laughing, saying, no, it's not true. Anyway, I won't make any jokes about my house because my son's here to tell my wife. So Arjunacharya comes back and he sees his wife eating. He says, Devi? You know, what's going on? And she said, how dare you? You know, these young boys, they're so beautiful. One was dark complexion, one was a little lighter complexion. And how could you beat them like this? Arjunacharya said, beat them? You know. And he said, I didn't beat anybody. And he started thinking, and he said, could you please describe these two boys? He said, well, yeah, one was very dark complexion, had a peacock feather, and it seemed like he had a flute maybe tucked in it, you know, and the other one was very light complexion, had a plow. Duh, right? So he said, oh my, and she said there was these two cross marks. And then he got his manuscript, and he looked at Vahamyaham, and he saw these slash marks, two slash marks, just as she had described on Krishna's back. And then, so this is one way to teach a lesson. So Krishna taught Arjunacharya that he personally carries what he lacks. He personally brought that boga to Arjuna's, Acharya's wife. So this is Krishna. One time, Srila Prabhupada was shown a picture of Radha Kunjabihari, the deities in Detroit. That's a temple that I joined. And Kunjabihari is very tribanga. He's very, Kalachandri is very kind of straight and strong. And Kunjabihari is more kind of dainty, but his head is going more towards Srimati Radharani. So Srila Prabhupada was looking at the picture and he was giving like a darshan with devotees, and he turned it around and showed it to the devotees and he said, "This is Krishna." Then he put the picture down and he said, "He's so inclined to his devotees." So this is Krishna. Krishna, of all the different qualities, he has so many different qualities, but practically his favorite quality to be called by is Bhakta Vatsala, that he loves his devotees. And we were talking last night, my family, and we were talking about how Krishna, sometimes he's a little crooked, a little tricky. You know, he sometimes bends the rules or breaks them completely. Right? He's stealing butter. He's telling Arjuna to get Karna when he's kind of down and out. He's calling the gopis in the middle of the night, like this picture here, you see? Right, so he's not... But in each and every time that Krishna breaks the rules, he only breaks the rules for one reason. Any guesses? Jai, that's why we have Maharaj here. Because I was probably going to get it wrong. Yeah. Yes, to please his devotees. So we are really lucky that, you know, we're here and we're devotees of Krishna. Because Krishna... It's one thing, I think we maybe mentioned this a few weeks ago when we were here, but it's one thing if somebody is all-powerful but not all-merciful, right? If somebody's all-powerful and not all-merciful, could be a problem, right? Especially like they're bipolar or they have mood swings or something, you know, it could be very dangerous, right? And it's another thing if somebody is all-merciful, very, very wonderful person, but doesn't have any power, any shakti, can't do much for you. But when you take this combination, that God, Krishna, is all-powerful and all-merciful, that's someone to take shelter of. That's someone who actually can fulfill this very bold statement, yoga shema mahamyaham, that I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. So that means in so many things, if we just have devotion, if we actually develop our love for Krishna, or work on developing our attachment for Krishna, chanting his name, serving his devotees, then Krishna becomes so inclined, just as Prabhupada said, becomes so inclined to us. And then our life becomes sublime. It doesn't mean that necessarily when you walk out the door, there's a brand new Lexus outside waiting for you or something like that. Or, you know, your child gets into Harvard. But something much better than that. That actually our whatever suffering that we naturally all have in this world, khatam ho gaya. It's finished at the end of this life. And we actually go... to that place where, you know, every song, every word is a song and every step is a dance. And not only that, but even the things that happen to us in this world. Because if you get a Lexus, what if somebody keys it? Right? It's actually more suffering than if you have, you know, a beat up Nissan. Right? Right? It's actually more pain, right? So it's not so much that when Krishna preserves what he has and carries what we lack, that we get the Lexus, but we react to whatever happens to us due to our past karma and thing in a totally different way. And things affect us in a different way. So it's not what happens to us that's really important, it's how we react to what happens to us. That's what really differentiates a good, you know, a devotee especially from others. So Krishna gives us that intelligence. He gives us that ability to react in a caring way, in a loving way, in an exemplary way, in a way to be proud of. And that's really when, you know, when we're lying on our deathbeds and, you know, we look back at our life, you know, we're not proud of that we, you know, whatever we did, you know, we got Uncle Sam and didn't have to pay $10,000 on our time. But we're very proud of, you know, the things that we did for others and especially the service that we did for Krishna. And this is so nice, this program here, because the best way to serve Krishna is to serve his devotees. You know, if Prabhupada gives the example, he often, one of the greatest acquisitions in Prabhupada's time of land was we got a beautiful plot of land in Juhu. How many of you have been to Juhu? Okay, so you all know Juhu is kind of an upscale area, right, in the beach. If you walk on the beach in the morning, you see these very well-to-do Mumbaiites walking up and down the coast. They're not swimming because that water is not very clean, as we all know, right? They don't swim there. And Prabhupada gave the example that if you see a rich man with his son, how are you going to get that rich man's favor? You can't, you know, you offer him a Lexus, he's got five of them, right? You offer him this or that, you know. What can you do to please him, right? But if you take a one rupee candy and you give it to his son, and if his son is satisfied, is pleased, then the man might say, what can I do for you? Right? Because so in the same way, Krishna, of course we do serve Krishna, but especially one of the best ways to serve Krishna is through his devotees. And of course we're so fortunate that we have Maharaj here, who's a devotee par excellence. Joined Krishna consciousness so early, just one of the early pioneers of Krishna consciousness in Buffalo, New York. He went to the University of Buffalo, which, anyway, I can tell a joke about that. Because when you're in India, also my Guru Maharaj Burijampu went to the University of Buffalo, and when someone says in India to him, where did you go to school? He says, the University of Buffalo. And they all laugh, like, how could you name a university after a buffalo? You know, it's like the dumbest animal, you know, in India. But it's actually a very good school. It's SUNY at Buffalo. And Maharaj joined there, and also he preached for quite a bit of time here in Texas, and he comes to visit regularly. So we're very fortunate to have him here. And so if we serve, and it's not only the Maharajas that we serve, but even the, you know, the Krishna is pleased when we serve, you know, the humblest devotee, the one who, you know, washes the pots or, you know, cleans the bathrooms or whatever. They're Krishna's devotees. So we shouldn't, you know, just be really nice to the sannyasis and everyone else can kind of, you know, go to hell, you know, right? But we should be careful to please all of Krishna's devotees, and to, you know, show special attention to those that are spreading Krishna consciousness as Maharaj does 24/7. So, thank you, Hare Krishna.
So, just the verse again: Ananyas chintayantam am ye jana paripasate tesham nityuktanam yoga shemam baham yaham. To those who are constantly devoted, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and carry what they lack. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Kauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyatya De Siddharane. Thank you very much, Braja Vihari. I don't really have very much to add after that wonderful class. Unless I wanted to make up my own philosophy. So, somehow or another, he covered the philosophy. But. So we're almost done with our talk. So here Krishna says, Ananyas Chintayantam. for one who is constantly engaged in meditating upon me. Now, how can we actually come to the platform of constantly engaged in meditating upon Krishna? So generally, we meditate upon someone we love. So the question is, we hear about love of Krishna, how can we actually love him? It is said that love for Krishna is natural. All we do is have to become conscious of Krishna, and then naturally we'll love him. The only problem we have in this world is that we're not conscious of Krishna. And the only reason why we're not conscious of Krishna is that we find no reason to become conscious of Krishna because we're too busy engaged in doing other things, namely trying to compete against Krishna. Of course, none of us here has a goal of just obviously competing against Krishna. For the devotees, it's a little bit more subtle. Because number one, although we hear about the glories of Krishna, to actually become conscious of Krishna takes a little bit more endeavor and practice, renunciation, and some other qualities. But of all the different qualities we have to obtain, one thing that makes it everything very simple is by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, all we do is have to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Then, of course, there's so much philosophy about how to chant Hare Krishna, etc., that oftentimes we forget about it, especially when we're chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, to make everything very simple, out of all the different offenses and this and that, the most important thing is just to chant nicely. Chanting nicely means, well, let's come back to that. First, we just have to listen. That's all we do is have to listen. We don't have to add anything else because Krishna and Krishna's name are non-different. We don't have to add any philosophy to Krishna's name. We don't have to add any sweet singing to Krishna's name. We don't have to add anything to Krishna because Krishna is absolutely wonderful. And unlimited pleasure is there in Krishna's name. So therefore, first of all, we just have to listen to the name. And if we listen attentively to the name, then the result is gradually Krishna will give us the intelligence by which we can actually feel Krishna's presence. And if we feel Krishna's presence, the nature of Krishna's presence is blissful. We have a little indication of that by the fact that people can constantly repeat Krishna's name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we don't get tired of it. Now, if we were chanting some name like, I usually use the word, the famous Mickey Mouse Donald Duck, because when I grew up, they were actually chanting that name. There was a mantra club called the Mickey Mouse Club, and they were actually chanting on television, Mickey Mouse, and then there was another, just like we have the devotees, and then they had the demon, Donald Duck. So one group would chant, Mickey Mouse, and then the other group would go, Donald Duck, whatever. But how long could they chant it? Only a half an hour each week. And obviously it was a mantra that carried over very well. There was no disciple succession. And I don't think anyone was initiated into Mickey Mouse, and certainly not into Donald Duck. But we're chanting Hare Krishna, and even if we're not shivering in ecstasy, and even if we're not, rolling on the floor, somehow or another, there's enough inspiration, enough experience, enough liking to chant that we can do it over and over and over again. Now it is said that eventually when we chant Hare Krishna, we'll actually be able to feel Krishna's presence. And when we feel Krishna's presence, that's called ruchi. Now, in order to come to Ruchi, it's recommended that we become free from anarthas and of all the anarthas simply by chanting attentively. Now, we can hear, for instance, I can chant Hare Krishna loud enough. My voice is not so strong right now, but I can chant it loud enough. You have no choice but to hear. But that doesn't mean we've actually heard, because there's a subtlety to the consciousness, and in order to actually learn how to hear, we have to be consistently engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore, Krishna says, to constantly meditating upon me, worshiping my transcendental form, those who are constantly engaged in my service also. Ananyas chintayantomam, ye jana paripasate, tesham nityabhyuktanam, who always engage in worshiping me. So what is that worship? Of course, as Braj Vihari Prabhu is saying, we have to engage in the service of the devotees. So our disciple succession, they're telling us how to engage our entire life. In other words, how to make the atmosphere Krishna consciousness throughout our whole day. That probably takes as much, if not more, sacrifice than simply chanting Hare Krishna. Because then we have to actually think deeply who this energy belongs to. Not just the temple, not just our house. I mean, it would be hard enough to always look around our house to actually believe that my husband is actually Krishna's energy, or my wife is Krishna's energy, and my children are all Krishna's energy, and my pet dog is Krishna's energy. I mean, that's difficult. But then to think that my body is Krishna's energy, oh, that's a little too much. You know, that means I have to constantly engage in his service and always be, you know, I. No more videos. No. Okay. This is a little too fanatical. But obviously Krishna understands. Therefore, if we try to hear, and then, for instance, it is said that anukulasya sankalpe pratikulyasya varjana. The idea if we have a sadhana, every day we chant a certain number of rounds. And then every day we do a certain amount of puja, certain amount of sadhana. We give a certain amount in charity. We do a certain regulative service. Then the result is gradually Krishna will peek into our lives. And then the idea of giving up something may appear. Something that we had no idea that we were attached to, or that we knew we were attached to, and we thought maybe next lifetime. Gradually that idea enters, and then as we agree, as accept it, and give up some of our bad habits, then the result is all the things that draw our mind away from Krishna, then we'll notice that gradually as we're chanting Hare Krishna, our mind gets a little bit deeper into the holy name. We can listen with more attentiveness, and we have an ability to feel Krishna's presence a little tiny more. Then we think, oh, I'm a great devotee. This is here's my foot. You can touch the right one and the other. I've made it. Just like when I first joined the movement, I actually was thinking I was on a very, very high platform of devotional service. So my temple president, Rupanuga Prabhu, he had a policy that we had one book in the temple. We had actually two books. Well, we had three books of Krishna consciousness, my first joint. We had three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's original three volumes. And then we had a book that only Rupanuga Prabhu had. It was called the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. And he told me that I shouldn't read that book. So I thought, well, that was the book I should read. Any book he told me not to read, I definitely put it on my top of the list. So when everyone was asleep at night, I'd stay up and start reading the book. And there was a commentary by, because the author was not so bona fide in Prabhupada's eyes, but the commentator was Srila Jiva Goswami. So, of course, I was reading through it, and it mentioned how the different stages of bhava, how it turns into prema. So I was thinking, well, I'm almost on bhava, then. But I should confirm this with Srila Prabhupada. And maybe there's some other thing about prema I don't, that's not in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that probably would want to tell me. So I wrote him a question. When I sent him a donation for his book fund, I asked him, how does bhava turn into prema? Fortunately, Prabhupada is like the all-pervading super soul. Because he was actually in contact with the super soul. Therefore, he wrote me a page letter, a whole page letter. It was a short question, long answer. And the first paragraph was like 30 sentences, all about preaching, how we should go out in Buffalo and distribute Bhagavad Gita and spread the holy name. And the second paragraph was all about preaching also. How he said specifically that in New York, I've heard that they distributed 3,000 back to Godheads in just 2 weeks. And then in Buffalo, you're also distributing back to Godhead very nicely. So please, we've just had a Rath Yatra in San Francisco, and 10,000 boys and girls were dancing and chanting in full spiritual ecstasy. That the boys and girls of your country, they're generally good souls. So please continue in this way, and your success of life is assured. As Krishna sees that you're working seriously to bring Krishna's other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all his blessings upon you. That Krishna is never ungrateful for our efforts to serve him, rest assured. Then at the end, turn the page over, he said, as far as your question, how bhava turns into prema, there's no need to worry yourself over such advanced topics at the present time. And shortly my book, The Nectar of Devotion, will come out, and you can read about it there. And by the way, you said that you enclosed $50 in the letter, but I don't find the $50 in it. Whatever our position in our state of consciousness, somehow or another, if we start meditating upon how to spread Krishna consciousness, we can spread Krishna consciousness by our words, we can spread it by donations, by our wealth, we can spread it by our intelligence, or we can spread it by utilizing all our energies in Krishna's service. But somehow or another, if we think deeply, pray to Krishna how he'd like us to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, then that will engage some of our energies in the most valuable Sankirtan movement. And the result of it is that we'll enter deeper into the holy name. Otherwise, if we don't do that and we try to chant the holy name, then we'll think about what's happening to my business, what's happening to my family, my mother back in India. So many different things we'll think about, because we won't connect them with Krishna. We'll connect them with our ideas about what we need, what we have to protect, what we have to provide. We'll protect them with so many things. But if we simply engage our energies, even to the smallest amount, in Krishna's service, then the result is our mind will become free, because we're depending upon Krishna. And the result is, when our mind becomes free, we'll be able to concentrate more deeply on the holy name. And gradually, the attention will be there, and our feelings will be able to feel Krishna's presence, and then we'll realize that Krishna is actually with us, and that how wonderful it is to associate with Krishna, and we'll become addicted to associating with Krishna. And therefore, we'll gradually be able to think of him constantly, and we'll believe he'll actually protect everything that we really need, and he'll carry to us everything that we really need, especially him, especially him and his devotees. So thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I said, now what? Questions?
Questions, yeah. Yes.
As we start to try and do certain things in Krishna consciousness, we get diverted, it seems like, real easy. How do we get steady in steadily doing service?
Well, the first thing is to have an idea of what our steady service should be. We should, see what am I actually supposed to do every day in devotional service? What is my present level of commitment? What is my ideal level of commitment? And then see if we can work towards some ideal level of commitment. If we look at only our ideal level of commitment, we'll always feel disappointed. And if we see what is my minimum level of commitment and we perform it and we do a little bit more than that, then we'll actually feel encouraged. So I know the ideal devotee is 24 hours engaged and he's always thinking about Krishna. You know, as soon as he thinks of sense gratification, immediately he spits.
I think I'm where he is.
He offers everything to Krishna, whatever he has, exactly. And then we look at our devotional service and we think, well, how many lifetimes? You know. But if we see, what am I actually doing on a daily basis? And what should I be doing? What can actually be my commitment under my circumstances? And then we think, all right, let me do what I'm supposed to be doing every day. And then if I can do a little extra, so much the better. And then we'll feel encouraged. How many of our devotees here, they're chanting at japa every day? How many would like to chant japa every day? How many don't understand English? Bolte in Greski, hey? So that's nice. So. Yes. How should we
not be fear with the situation that we are dealing with?
How should we not be fearful of the situation? What situation are you dealing with?
Any situation that we have in our life. Material in this sense.
Are you afraid right now? So Brad, we hurry, Ganesh.
You can hire bodyguards. Mark Twain,
King Ugrasena was a great devotee of Krishna, but he had, according to the Krishna book at least, 32 quadrillion bodyguards. So even great devotees sometimes have a fear complex.
I was going to quote a great Vaishnava, Mark Twain. Anyway. Aspiring Vaishnava. He said something pretty wise, that he said that so many calamities have happened in my life, and fortunately, most of them never happened. Meaning that in our mind, we tend to create a lot of what-if situations. What if this happens? What if that happens? And the mind tends to snowball. I guess in Dallas, you don't have too much experience with snowballs, right? Although there was a little snow last year, right? Yeah, but I grew up in New York. And snowball, if you take a small ball like this and you roll it in the snow, well, you were in Buffalo, you know, for sure.
You didn't have to roll the snow.
Buffalo is in the snow belt. I mean, it gets a lot of snow. And then you roll it in the, especially a certain kind of snow, and it gradually grows and grows and grows, and it gets huge after, and one time, actually, we had a snowball that kind of got out of hand, and it rolled down a hill, and it smashed into a car and totaled the car. And luckily, the guy had insurance, because my mother was really upset with me that day when that happened. But the point is that our mind does that. It takes a situation. It often happens when we're about to take rest, especially. I don't know if you ever had that experience. But our mind, there's a problem. There's always problems in this world. And it's about this big. But then, what if this happens? What if that happens? What if that happens? What if this happens? Right? And we worry about things that generally don't happen. So it does take some, you know, Krishna speaks the Bhagavad Gita on the level of intelligence, and it does take some strength of intelligence to differentiate what is kind of a bona fide, you know, a proper thing to worry about and deal with it, and other things that's just the mind taking over. Mm-hmm. And so then to think, what can I practically do to improve this situation? You see, when we think of what we can practically do, then it's a positive thing. And of course, as Maharaj was saying, the first thing we can practically do is take shelter of Krishna. And remember that he, as I was saying, he's all powerful and all loving. Okay? And then see what we can practically do, because what really gets bad is when we just worry about stuff that you can't do anything about, right? Like global warming. You know, if you just say, oh, geez, what's going to happen to this planet and my grandchildren? They're going to, you know, and the polar, what is it? Ice cap, not the bears, the polar ice caps, you know, and these things. And you can't do a darn thing about it. Of course, but then you could say, well, what could I do? Well, I can, you know, buy a Prius or I can do this, or, you know, and then it becomes something positive that you can do. See, but just to worry about things is one of the greatest wastes of time that we can imagine in life. And it also means that we're not thinking of Krishna when this happens. So there may be bona fide worries. You know, you have a huge mortgage and you lose your job. That's a bona fide worry, right? But even something as serious as that, you know, we look at it and we think, okay, what can I do? Well, I can go job hunting. I can move into, you know, I can, what people are doing, I can forfeit my mortgage and move into a smaller place. I can go back to move in my folks. You know, that you probably have 10 or 15 different options. But sometimes we don't think about those options, we just worry. And that basically gets us nowhere fast. So worrying is a real, one of Maya's great tricks. And for devotees, it takes the place of, you know, first taking shelter of Krishna. It's not that a devotee just sits around and takes shelter of Krishna. I'm thinking of Krishna. Right. But if we surrender to Krishna, as Maharaj just reminded me, Krishna says, Masucha, that there's, you know, don't worry. So in the ultimate sense, there's nothing to worry about. And in the conditioned sense, when we're dealing with this world, there are things to worry about, but make sure we keep them in their proper perspective. And like I was saying, when we're connected with Krishna, things look different. They're put in a more proper perspective. Not that we just neglect them, but we understand. You know, for example, gosh, I'm eternal. I've had so many lifetimes. I've lost so many jobs. I've made millions and I've lost millions in so many, you know. So again, not to belittle the things that happen to us that are serious, but we look at them in the proper perspective, and it really helps us get through life in a much more proper and peaceful way. And Krishna says, if you want to be peaceful, remember that he's the enjoyer, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. He's the owner of everything, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, and he's a friend of everyone. You want to add to that, Marsha? Is that okay, Prabhu?
Yes.
surrenders to Krishna, like, how do we know that he started surrendering now? Like, what's the process of, when do you know that you are surrendered now?
How do we know when we're surrendered? Well, we could probably take it for granted that we're not. But how do we know when we start? Well, Krishna is very kind. He says, as I quoted before, anakulyasya sankalpe. He just wants us to do something positive. So in the beginning, you take someone who gives you a plate of prasadam, and you say, oh, well, I'll surrender. I'm in the right mood for surrender right now. I'll eat the prasadam. So that's surrender. And then they say, well, chant Hare Krishna. And they say, I can't say so many names. No, I can't say Hare Krishna. It's too many names. Just like there was one Muslim Qazi. He was torturing all the devotees. And one day Gadadhar, Pandit, he went to try to convert this Muslim Qazi. So this was a very horrible Muslim Qazi. He would kill the devotees, he killed cows, he was always intoxicated. So he came to his house and he was screaming at the Qazi, Qazi, today you're going to chant Hare Krishna. So he woke the Qazi up and he came running out with his sword. Who is this person who dares come? And so he saw it was Gadadhar Pandit. So he says, Gadadhar Pandit, you know, go to sleep, you know, don't disturb me. So Gadadhar Pandit said, no, I want you to chant Hare Krishna. So he said, chant Hare Krishna, you know, I'll do that tomorrow, just go to sleep. So Gadadhar Pandit started to dance in ecstasy. Oh, he chanted. So as soon as we start chanting Hare Krishna or taking some prasadam, that's also the beginning of surrender. What to speak of other things? And that goes down into our eternal bank account. We only have one eternal bank account. Chase Manhattan will not keep your bank account eternally. Nor will Citibank or Wells Fargo, none of them. Only the Krishna account is eternal. So if we deposit something into that account, that's actually permanent benefit. Of course, if we're someone like Draupadi called out, Hey Govinda, in such a way that even Krishna was remembering what she said, and he said, I'm remembering it repeatedly, this call of my name by Draupadi, because it was done with such love and devotion that Krishna couldn't forget it. So Krishna doesn't forget, even we chant his holy name once, he'll remember it, even everyone else may forget. Yes, Krishna feels obligated. Here, of course, to make someone feel obligated takes a great effort. You could serve sometimes your family throughout the whole life, like in the material world. At the end, they're still not satisfied. You say, my dear wife, I want to take sannyas. And she says, my dear husband, you haven't done any service for the family yet. And what to speak of the wife, our senses. We serve them faithfully throughout the whole life. Whatever they're demanding, we do without any hesitation. And then finally, at the end of life, they kick us out, get lost. So Krishna is not like that. That Krishna feels, but even we chant a little, whatever we do, he feels greatly indebted by it. So what to speak of the great devotees like Draupadi, when they chant with such feeling that how much indebted, how much bliss Krishna feels when he remembers. And the nature of transcendental life in itself is nitya nava nava yavana. It's eternally going on. Here we say something, it's forgotten in the course of time. Ultimately, it's just like it says in the Bhagavatam, like the babble of sea waves. We go to the ocean and we listen to the waves. There's the sound vibration is there. So many things are going on the waves, but it's meaningless ultimately because it's all temporary. Similarly, in this world, someone comes along like Julius Caesar or Napoleon, whatever else, and people talk about them, they glorify them. But who was the great personalities in the last life of Brahma? Can anyone name one of them? Does anyone know the name of Brahma in the last Brahma? We don't even know who this Brahma is, what to speak of the last one. So for the Brahma, he's thinking, I'm the Lord of the universe, everyone knows my name, but we don't even know their name. Sometimes Prabhupada would do that. Someone would ask, do you know such and such spiritual leader in such and such community, world famous? And Prabhupada said, no, who is he? And the reporter would go, he's not so famous. But Krishna is such that we simply chant his name once or we do some service for him, he never forgets and he feels unlimitedly obligated. And whatever we do, which is inconceivable, Krishna remembers that eternally. And every time he remembers it, he feels more indebted, not only to Draupadi, but to everyone who engages in his service. And therefore, he feels more and more blissful. And on the basis of that bliss, everyone else becomes more and more blissful too. And that way, the spiritual world goes on. If Krishna said, well, all right, they chanted his name and I gave him a car, so much for that. And now he chanted his name again. I gave him, a new fountain, whatever. Put another 25,000 in his bank account. No, Krishna doesn't think like that. He feels so obligated from whatever we were doing, he feels I can never repay them. So this is inconceivable to us. But then again, if we chant Hare Krishna and we feel transcendental happiness by doing it, how can we repay Krishna for that transcendental happiness? All we can do is chant his name again. Try to please him a little bit more. So that's spiritual life. We try to please Krishna, and when we're trying to please Krishna, how much happiness we feel again and again. And when Krishna remembers the happiness of his devotees, trying to please him, he feels happiness, and then he tries to please his devotees more and more.
Did
I have something?
No, no.
Maybe we should have kirtan. Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you all.